Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Red and White Chalkboard Podcast with me, your host Cormac, and my co-host Taylor. Taylor, how the hell are we doing?
Bonjour, bro, amigo. Oh, good man. I'm a very happy man. The end of the international break is in sight. The return of Premier League football is in sight, and I can't wait to get into all of it.
Absolutely. We've got a corker of an episode, as always, this week, folks. We tuck on the appointment of Ange Postecoglou. Daniel Levy, Spurs.
Works.
I'm rolling with that. The Onana saga has at least come to somewhat of an end as well. Man United's goalkeeper troubles keep happening. City and their financial troubles keep going. Taylor tries to dumb it down for us normies over here. We return to the Red and White scoreboard and we look to see how our predictions have done from the week before. Spoiler, one of us did fairly okay, the other one less so. We'll come into that later in the episode. And then also preview some of the big games from this weekend, looking at Man City versus Man United, Arsenal versus Forest, as well as pretty much all the others. It's been another great episode. This is, by the way, after the recording, in case you couldn't tell. But I hope you guys enjoy.
Right, first thing to touch on, I think, which is kind of the most relevant news, broke this morning. Ange Postecoglou is taking over Nottingham Forest with Nuno on his way out.
It's a bad day to be Nuno Espirito Santo.
And probably Nottingham Forest fans on the back
and
of that.
Yeah, maybe even Ange Postecoglou.
This is kind of been rumbling for a while. Obviously, there's been kind of, they had that big fallout on the pitch. The owner, Marinakis, there we go. Jesus, not a word guy. Had a big fallout on the pitch last year, which was very public. Nuno said a couple of weeks ago as well that their relationship hasn't really mended and they're kind of not as close as they were. And then there this morning, it was official that he had been let go by Nottingham Forest and sacked. First of the season, I don't know how many of you would have had Nuno down as the first to go. I think it probably wouldn't have been unlikely to have him down, but it's still, I think, a bit of a shock for him to go as early as he has. Taylor, what are your initial thoughts on this?
Well, Cormac, my initial thoughts are, what is the true story behind Nuno Espirito Santo losing his job at Nottingham Forest? So obviously, many believe that it is because of a fractured relationship with the owner. I can actually confirm his own relationship with the owner was fine. It was.
Oh, we got the inside scoop.
I have got the inside scoop.
Nice.
I just know further details, which I'm happy to share on this podcast for all you fellow listeners. So I'd say if I was to rate it out of 10, his relationship with Marinakis, I'd say it's 5 out of 10. Absolutely average. Nuno wanted a more condensed squad. He wanted a couple of higher quality signings. He wanted the club to show the direction it was truly going in. But what was the real issue? So earlier on in the summer, actually the beginning of July, Marinakis hired Edu as his global ex-Arsenal sporting director. Now chief of football, I guess, for the Nottingham Forest operations, which I guess also stretches to Olympiacos and another random team, which I don't care about. Edu was made head of all of this. And apparently in the initial meeting between Edu and Nuno, Nuno just took an instant, like, outward, in front, like, frontward-facing dislike to Edu in, like, a bad way.
Right.
Just hated almost every bone in his body immediately. Relationship was never fixed to be able to be broken, if that makes sense. From the immediate. And apparently,
is this all alleged? Is this what is?
No, this is just what happened. This is the reason why Nuno's been let go now, because what happened was he clashed so much with Edu. The more conspiratorial side of it is that obviously Nuno being a Jorge Mendes client, the super agent, and Edu being a a very difficult last name. Famous Iranian businessman.
Got it.
Kia Jerubin or something like that. We're going to go with it.
No,
And how, since Nuno is in charge, Mendes very much had control of the players that they would bring in. Clients that fall under Edu's new agent being Douglas DeWeese, another one which has escaped my mind. But a very clear deviation in the transfer strategy, very clear change of style. And on top of that, Edu and Nuno did not get on at all, which led to incredible frictions, but not like behind closed doors. It was happening out in the open. Everyone at Nottingham Forest knew that this was. And that's what led Nuno to get really aggressive and really outspoken in his press conferences, which then has forced kind of Marinakis to decisively pull the trigger, because it very much seemed like it had to be one or the other.
I get it. I think that's fair. Like, it
they couldn't sit in this weird state of in between for forever.
The two biggest people at the club hated each other.
Yeah.
And that can't that can't exist.
Not last. I saw some reports as well. Sorry, I cut you off there a little bit. But apparently the players are quite gutted because I think he had a very good relationship with quite a few of the
Penny, Paul Morgan, Gibbs White thoughts after signing that contract.
That was what a decision he's made there. But I think from the footballing side of things, Nuno has been a revelation, really, hasn't he, for Nottingham Forest? You know, he went from taking over from Steve Cooper, keeping them up, to, you know, there was times last year where people were talking about them finishing in the top four.
They were third for 60%, 65% of the season.
I mean, they did fall off in the end and they ended up in the conference position, obviously, now getting Europa on the back of Crystal Palace losing their position there. But, yeah, I feel for Nottingham Forest fans a little bit. I feel for Nuno because I don't know exactly how it all went down, but maybe it could have been handled slightly better. Maybe Edu was the one in the wrong position here. But I think working with someone like Marinakis in the first place is going to be exhausting.
I feel bad. Yeah, you're right, for the fans, because everyone hates a meddling owner. Although, albeit it seems like he's been nothing but fantastic for the club.
He's invested a lot of money.
A lot of money. But there is some clear failures with him as the person he is, which in terms of a footballing perspective, the business of football side of things, he causes huge problems, albeit obviously has had success and has elevated that team. So I feel sorry for the fans, because if you lose a manager you like, that's gutting. There's not many of them. And if Ange comes in and plays a completely different style of play to Nuno and it doesn't work, everyone's going to be like, what the hell? What an unnecessary step. You know, I think they started the season fine. They beat Brentford.
I can pull up the other fixtures. I can't remember the top of my head.
They've invested. They've got Douglas Luiz. They've got James McAtee.
Yeah, they spent a lot of money.
Yeah, they've bought that new striker from Rennes. They've heavily invested.
Yeah, they did lose 3-0 to West Ham, didn't they, last week?
You do get sacked if you lose to West Ham.
Yeah, they drew against their big rivals, Crystal Palace, as well.
Yeah. So overall, I just think it's an absolute cluster smirk of just the business side of football getting too messy, and has led to a manager which is well liked. I feel bad for Nuno, but at least he'll probably walk away with a hefty pay packet. Terms in June. You can tell it's an Edu thing because he signed a new contract in June and Edu started on the 1st of July. So everything was fine in June, even post like pitch alteration, which everyone saw, and everyone was like, oh my god, is he going to walk? You can't be doing that. He signed a new contract after that. Edu's come in and obviously it's all kind of gone to pot. But Ange, on the other hand, interesting.
It's an interesting appointment. Obviously, they've got that Greek connection, I guess,
presented him with an award.
I did see that at the end of the season. I think this only ends in tears before bedtime. I can't see this working out. Where Nuno, his style of football has been they've been very defensively sound. They were one of the best defensive teams in the league last year. Going from that, going to Ange Postecoglou, who, as far as we know, sort of two seasons that he had at Spurs, he is given very entertaining football to watch. All out attack, everyone going up. That high fucking line that is kind of all or nothing really with them. I think it's the team is designed to play around that Nuno style and completely different. You know, coming to the Ange football, which is the antithesis of that. Word of the day by Cormac.
Huge.
I can't see the fans really getting on board as well. I'm very intrigued. Obviously, he did win the Europa League with Spurs last year. Forest are now obviously in the Europa League this year. That's an interesting factor as well. Is he able to repeat that? I don't know. How do you see this working out?
You know what? I often do disagree with you, but I also agree. I think this only ends in tears.
That's boring, isn't it? Agreeing.
Yeah. I guess I do like your point about the Europa League. That actually crossed my mind. Did it? Felt so nice. Had to do it twice. But what I will say is to spend all the preseason with Nuno solidifying the styles and the defensive.
I'm assuming he would have had some contribution in the play. I mean, I don't know. He probably didn't actually.
To spend all preseason honing in on the defensive nature of Nuno's style of play, to then completely flip it on its head, and to have Ange's got to come in my personal opinion, Ange has to come in and recognise the situation. Can't be all stubborn, mate. And has to have some flexibility.
Especially in the early weeks.
If he wants to get results. Because if he loses the first three games, the Forest fans are going to be fuming.
You've got Arsenal on Saturday, which I'm very excited for. Yeah. That sweet, sweet high line, mate. Gyökeres is going to be licking his lips. This is like playing in... Shut up, don't pull that face. This is going to be like playing in Portugal. It is. With all the guys sat on the halfway line, all he's going to do is run the channels. And you know what we're going to do? We're not going to give him the ball.
Yeah, that's huge, actually, yeah.
But yeah, sorry, Arsenal sidetrack. But yeah, it's an interesting one.
It could either go fine or horribly wrong.
I can't see it
going very well.
Yeah, I feel bad for Nottingham Forest fans. Because, I mean, they've gone from a team which everyone really liked. And then Marinakis has kind of got his, you know, his hands on it all. I mean, he's also a reason to credit for why they've got so far. You know,
yeah,
you
but the whole thing around like Palace going to the Court of Arbitration for Sport for their Europa League place and losing, and then obviously the whole what's going on in the background. What is this? Why is Palace being made a fool out of? Are Forest benefiting? Of course they are. They got Europa League spot.
There we go.
So it's all the dodgy dealings of football, which I really hate to think about. And it's just a decision like this kind of brings it all to light that football is more than just the beautiful game that we love. It's the business side of it, which just like everyone who has a job, you have days where someone comes in and you've never met them before and you butt heads, but it's the same in football. And now he's lost his job and they've got to start again. And it could derail their season. It could also not, but
yeah, I mean, it's
more
totally
likely
the season, isn't it? That we're, it's hard to gauge, but
good luck to Forest for the rest of the season, I say.
And Ange Postecoglou. Speaking of Ange Postecoglou, Taylor, his ex-team, Tottenham Hotspurs, have had a massive change within this last week. I mean, it feels like ages ago now, actually. But their chairman, Daniel Levy, who has been there since 2001, I'm going to say, I think that's correct, has stepped down or been let go, is probably more likely on that one there, which has kind of caught everyone completely off guard. And like I said, he's been such a big character in that Spurs saga, especially the kind of Spursiness over the years of them never winning a trophy. He's been getting a lot of shit over the last probably 10, 15 years, to be honest. Never quite spending enough money. And Spurs fans, I've never heard a Spurs fan say anything nice about him at all. And now he is gone, not long after doing that overlap interview as well, which we've spoken about off camera, which we do sometimes. Really caught me off guard, Taylor. I don't know about you.
Well, no one in the footballing world was expecting
this. I thought
this.
You might have had your sources.
Have some more inside scoops to bring you. But as you say, yeah, the longest standing non-executive chairman in the Premier League has been let go. You're right, he hasn't left his job. He's been let go.
Mm-hmm.
The reason is why this has come around is because my favourite type of corporation, consultant companies from America.
Yeah, what's their name? They have a great name, the consulting company that they use.
Oh, I can't even.
I'm going to find it. Keep talking.
You've got to find it. It's a great name. So basically, the Lewis family, who put Levy in post 21 years ago, decided at the beginning of the year they wanted to bring in a consultancy firm to top down, to sort figure out, speak to lots of senior people at the club, why are we not winning more? We're not winning enough games. What is wrong with the footballing, business, operations, et cetera, which prevents us from winning more consistently? And obviously, the findings of said consultancy firm, which Cormac, have you locked
in? Bear with me. I really want to find the name, but it's a great name. I can't. Sorry, keep going.
Come to their conclusions and obviously delivered their findings to the Lewis family, which would be a resulting change at the top of the tree of leadership. Resulting in Daniel Levy being let go, which is actually quite interesting because he still owns, I think he has 21% of shares. Obviously, he's just accumulated through his very many years of service working at the club. You know, he was one of the most influential, chairmen the Premier League's pretty much ever seen. And what actually bugs my bearings a lot is that Spurs fans really don't know how good they've had it. I genuinely think he's been very good. He's built you a top-class stadium. This is why I think he's been very good. Germans can get sometimes ahead of themselves and want to fiddle with the football too much when they don't really know enough. That's fair. He's probably been guilty of it, which has probably not helped them when it comes to the top honours. But if it also wasn't for his interventions and his scheming and his operations that's allowed him to build training grounds and stadiums and merchandising and marketing across the world, Spurs are now considered a top six club. But there has been other teams in the Premier League which probably have won more in that time, which could have deserved to have been established top six other than Spurs. And Spurs are now known to be a top six club, but really...
They are the sixth in the big six, aren't they?
No one else has ever been able to make it a top seven in my adulthood.
No.
Spurs were the first and last in my living memory that was able to break into that and really become part of it without actually winning anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the big one, isn't it? I think that's what frustrated Spurs fans.
No, but it could have been the other way. They could have just been a Villa, a Newcastle. There's nothing outside. The only thing that give Tottenham hope is the fact that they're a London club. But there are other London clubs who haven't been able to do what Tottenham have done. There is other clubs which are, looking back in history, bigger than Tottenham, i.e. a Newcastle, an Aston Villa, even an Everton, et cetera, which have never been able to... Even Everton were better than Tottenham during that time when Tottenham kind of made it into that top six shout. So what Daniel Levy has done is made Spurs better than they probably ever could have been. Had he not intervened and built them the infrastructure they've been built to, make the decisions that's been made. Obviously, he's the one been part of it, sacking managers when they've not been very good.
Yeah.
Maybe he's been guilty of holding on to a manager. But Spurs fans were very happy to see him go. It could get a lot worse. If you get sold to some hedge fund in America, I bet you'll all be wishing that you had Daniel Levy in charge still.
Yeah, I agree. I think he said it himself, didn't he, in that Overlap interview, that the history will make, he'll be remembered better than he currently is.
It's funny.
And they do probably have the best stadium in the very least the country, maybe even world football at the moment. I do think, though, saying like, it could have been that, fair, but it wasn't.
Mm-hmm. And I think that.
Spurs fans, again, I can't believe I'm defending Spurs fans here, but they were so close to kind of success several times. And I think there were moments where they did invest just that little bit more money.
But that's just the crux of football. Arsenal are so close to success. You've invested loads of money. You still might not win the league.
Yeah, but we've invested a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of money.
Yeah, but not always.
No, not always. But that was the thing at the time. Spurs, I think, have always spent cautiously. And especially their wage structure has been such a thing, haven't they?
Last year, they bought Dominic Solanke for like 60-something million.
Yeah,
They've spent 60 million on Kudus. They're buying 60 million pound players rate of other top eight teams in that.
True, but again, I think they've never... Like, Xavi Simons, I think, aside, when was the last... I think he's even a push. When was the last time Spurs made a signing and everyone went, okay, Spurs aren't messing around here. They're pushing the next step.
No, but the thing is...
Whereas Arsenal signing someone like Ozil back in the day, that was that.
But the difference
always
is...
done that. Chelsea have always done that. City have always done that.
You can't artificially manufacture your place in the food chain.
City did, though. I mean, obviously they
City
had big
money.
Yeah,
but City did in a completely different era when they almost had unlimited money. Spurs have never had that financial backing of a state fund. So you can't artificially manufacture where you sit in that food chain. If there's a massive player and everyone's like, oh my God, Spurs have pulled up, he's probably going to go, sadly to say, Spurs fans, somewhere else.
Mm.
Like, he's probably going to go to Liverpool. He's probably going to go to Man City. Probably going to go to Real Madrid.
Yeah.
Or he's still probably going to go to Manchester United or Arsenal. There's other places players will go before they choose to go to Spurs.
Is there an argument, though, that Daniel Levy has had time to change that narrative? And you look at the likes of Arsenal, who I guess kind of, even before Arteta, really weren't considered kind of one of the biggest clubs in the world as much as we are now. I'd argue when we're finishing eighth.
But you still had, for example, Alexis Sanchez.
Sanchez at the time, he was a great player and people recognised that, but he was coming off the bench at Barcelona. Mm-hmm. Ozil, I think, is the only one you can go, wow, that was a big deal. And again, I'm still to this day, I don't know how we got Ozil over the line. But I don't want to defend Spurs too much.
I just think, you're just comparing two different box of frogs, though. I just don't think Spurs are the sixth team in the
big
six.
Absolutely.
So if you think about it, if Spurs are going after that Ozil, more than likely, and Arsenal's going after that Ozil, so Arsenal are probably going to get him.
But again, they've just got, Eze is a good example of that. Why didn't they sign him?
Yeah. All I'm saying
is, they should have signed him.
And for what Tottenham have done, would Spurs fans prefer to be run like Chelsea? Almost definitely not.
Do you think?
100%. Chelsea are now ran like a player trading board, like
true.
A New York Stock Exchange.
I mean, are you talking current day Chelsea or Chelsea of the last
like current day Chelsea? Because I'm saying that you've lost the bloke you've been so desperate to get rid of.
Mm.
But the alternatives out there. If you are to be sold and the Lewis family sell up their shares, you'll most likely want to be bought by a state fund, B, a mix of investors, i.e. what Chelsea have got from US consortiums, and C, I don't even know what option C could be. It's pretty much, they're the only two types of people that can afford to buy and run football clubs. So you're either going to have a state ownership, prepared to be sports washed.
More of those.
And I hope none of you said anything about Man City and Newcastle before you all start flying new flags. Or secondly, you're all going to get bought by a US consortium, by a mix of people who want to spread their risk of investment. And you're their chosen spread of investment. And you're going to get treated as such.
Yeah.
So they want a return on their investments. Whereas the Lewis family are a long-term fan. Daniel Levy, obviously, being a fan.
Yeah.
He'll support the club from afar, I'm sure. Be careful what you wish for. It can get worse.
I mean, that is true. And I agree with a lot of what you're saying. Mm-hmm. The only thing I don't agree with, I don't agree with, I do agree with pretty much everything you're saying. And especially in the sense of, he has done a lot of good. But I do understand Spurs' frustration over the years of never quite breaking that narrative. Obviously, they won a trophy last year, which is massive for them. But never quite breaking that narrative of making that next step. Again, you're right, they don't have that history like the other big clubs mm-hmm. do. But a better run team, arguably, maybe did make that step. Maybe they did, you know, push for a title that year. Leicester won. Maybe you know, no one else did, but maybe they did win a Champions League final.
Penny, though, Penny, for your thoughts. Name me a team that's made that jump except Man City.
Yeah, I get that is true.
Because the only ones that come to my mind are like Atletico Madrid. They've won maybe a couple of La Ligas in a not very competitive league. Failed at the Champions League due to Real Madrid beating them every single time. In Italy, Napoli, I guess, have made a bit of a comeback.
Yeah,
but Italy's weird.
No one's got any money.
Yeah, no one's got any money, so it's kind of an level playing field. Germany, you got the manufactured Red Bull Leipzig, who almost made that jump.
Wolfsburg back in the day.
But Wolfsburg have been relegated and they've gone off the map in the world of modern football, I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know.
No, but I do, because
it's not easy to make that jump.
It's not like Spurs have ever been a small club.
But there's lots of clubs the size of Spurs.
Yeah, true. And again, they're not, I don't know. I understand what you're saying. But I mean, there was time I talked about Arsenal dropping out of the big six and putting Leicester in there instead, by the way. And that was 4 or 5 years ago.
And it just goes to show, you know, when people say take the jump, what does that mean? Because this year they actually won their first a European trophy.
Yeah.
Does that mean they've taken the jump? Absolutely not, because they finished 17th. There's no actual way to categorize making that jump, because football is just, it doesn't work like that. You have to have a special group of players to win, say, like what United have in the past, or City more recently with 3 in a row.
Mm.
You know, could Liverpool be considered to have not taken that jump the period they just kept losing to City?
Yeah.
And then, you know, but Spurs were always in and around the Champions League, been in it more in recent history than they ever had in their previous history, since like the 60s. You know, it should be getting what you wish for. I think Spurs sometimes overestimate their position in the food chain and should be pretty happy with what they've got and what they have.
You can't be like, don't have any ambition, Spurs, you'll be fine.
No, but everyone also always like, it's always, everyone wants to hate the man at the top. Man, fans do it, no matter who's the CEO. Yeah. Everyone hates him.
Yeah, I mean, everyone, but that's true. But yeah, I just do feel like Spurs fans have some right to be happy that he's gone.
Yes, if that's what you want to celebrate, you can celebrate.
Careful what you wish for, but also it's an exciting moment.
Yeah,
change is always bad. Yes. Change is always sometimes exciting.
Yes.
That being said, I hope you guys get relegated. That would be really fun.
Exactly. Yeah. Knocked out of the group stages of the Champions League. Everyone's singing they want to leave you back at the end of the season.
Speaking, Taylor, of people we're happy to see leave football clubs, I believe there's a certain United goalkeeper which is currently, well, as far as I'm confirmed a contract sign, has signed a contract for Trabzonspor in Turkey. Remind me of his name, please.
Oh, yes! Andre Onana, I can confirm, ladies and gentlemen, appears to be leaving Manchester United on loan to go to Trabzonspor in Turkey.
Yep.
Say
the perfect idea, don't worry.
Can I just tell you how happy I am for a minute?
Yeah.
Firstly, lol, he's moving to not one of the biggest clubs in Turkey, albeit Trabzonspor have a great crowd and everything. I'd say it's like the fourth biggest team in Turkey. If you're moving to Turkey at the grand old age of 29, you do want to be moving to one of the big three. Lol. Well done, Andre.
Yeah.
Secondly.
He's 29, by the way.
Yeah.
I thought he was like 26, 27.
Yeah. Nah, he's past it.
Yep.
Yeah, it's obviously after the Grimsby game, he asked the chief of executives whether he needs to be looking for a club. They told him no, just fight it out for your position. Obviously, we then brought in Lommens on deadline day, and it seems they very much quickly changed their tone and said, I'm just surprised he's not buying it. And I'm surprised it is an honour. But you know what? Actually, I see it from a squad harmony perspective.
Yeah.
Bayindir is highly rated in the squad as a vibesman.
Okay.
Nice. Onana is very much, he swings with the mood of the wind. Mm. And he... and one thing which really, really has deeply frustrated me to my core about what I've heard about Onana is that in every Manchester United contract, there is a 25% wage reduction when they don't qualify for the Champions League. So he... last season, at the beginning of last season, he went to the hierarchy and wanted a new contract because he wasn't happy when his wages got reduced 25% due to us getting knocked out of Champions League. Caveat it with, in the group stage of the Champions League, he was at fault for every single goal we conceded in the Champions League. And in the Premier League, he was deeply rooted in our major concerns as to why we didn't qualify in the Premier League. Anyway, this season... obviously, after a stellar season last season for us, he came back with the same thought. We didn't qualify for the Champions League. His wage was also reduced by 25% as per the terms of his contract. And can you believe at the beginning of this season, he's asked for a new contract again because he's not happy. He'll be very happy to know that he's getting double his pay in Turkey due to favorable tax returns for football players and extra bonuses he'll earn along the way if he manages to
signing on fee
save.
And the benefit from a flat 20% tax rate.
Yep, huge. Good for him. I'm sure that he'll be much happier with a much higher wage packet and away from the Manchester lights. Anyway, I think it's better that he's gone because now it allows Lommens to just be the goalkeeper.
He is the number
without
one.
Having Onana waiting in the wings. I can't believe how bad he played against Grimsby, man. I cannot believe that.
And that was his one appearance this season.
The one appearance he played against Leeds opposition, and he was literally at fault for both those goals, and we lost the penalty shootout.
Yeah.
He sucked. He's just been. I'm especially hateful towards Onana because I've been to a lot of the European away games, spent a lot of time and money going to watch Manchester United in far flung lands to almost always have to watch him chuck the ball in the back of his own net and cost us a result in one way or another. I just epitomizes it that Lyon, when we played Lyon last season, and there was the whole preamble where with Nemanja Matic, Onana comes out, he's like, yeah, we're going to smash him, this should be so easy. And then Nemanja Matic is like, bro, this goalkeeper is not even the best in like recent memory, let alone who's he to say anything, proceeds to then chuck balls in the back of his own net against Lyon. I'm just like, this guy just almost has been the end of me as a Man U fan. So to see the back of him, I'll take anyone. Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No.
That wasn't
you're right. You're right to stop me though, because my hate for Onana stretches far and wide, and I could talk about it for hours. But long story short, I'm very happy to see him gone. Very happy to see the back of him for a season, and I hope he does tremendously well. So we get a nice fat fee from Besiktas at the end of next season.
How much did you pay for him?
We paid £50 million for Andre Onana.
That's
fantastic.
It's trying to change.
Apparently, when we got rid of De Gea, a squad very much immediately rags to a goalkeeper.
Yeah.
And they reacted as in, this guy ain't as good as De Gea.
No.
And he has this fake bravado where he pretends like he's very confident, but he's very fragile.
Feel bad for him.
No, I don't feel bad for him. He just obviously doesn't have what it takes to be the number one goalkeeper in Manchester United. I feel like he's...
He does, eh?
Yeah, well, that's it. So, well, David De Gea did for many years.
True.
And there was a difference between his mistakes and Onana's mistakes because I feel like now I've lived a lifetime with Onana and it's only been two seasons. So, anyway, good to see the back of him. Good news.
Good news indeed. From one Manchester club to the other, Taylor...
Oh my God, we're talking again.
Don't complain about it. You have the time of your life.
I can't believe we're talking about this
now. We'll keep this short and sweet.
I will keep this short and sweet.
Man City, obviously, some news this week.
Yes.
You want to chat about that?
Yeah, so Manchester City and the Premier League settled, and you're probably thinking, oh, they've settled on the 115 charges. No, the other court case that Manchester City brought to the Premier League to counter the Premier League's legal argument against Manchester City. All very complicated, all very boring. But this case... between City and the Premier League and City contesting the associated party transaction rules that the Premier League wrote back in 2021 after Newcastle was taken over by the Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund. City disagreed with those rules and took them to court. Premier League were found to have anti-competitive rules and had to rewrite the rules. And now City have agreed with the Premier League's rewritten rules that they had brought to court in the first place. Because the Premier League had rewritten after the judgment was made. City brought these new rules to court and have since agreed that the rules are correct. So, long story short, both have settled. It's both very boring. It's very distracting from the actual big legal matter at hand. It's cost the Premier League lots of money whilst they're also trying to afford a case against City in the 115 charges. Both
charges.
Sorry, Carol. Oh, I've lost all authority. And City and the Premier League have both agreed to not discuss this anymore, which is the thing that bugs me the most, because the public pays for the Premier League as a product. It pays for Manchester City as fans of the club to pay the wages. Well, it depends what the 115 charges have to say. But anyway, the public pays for this. And if the clubs and the league aren't willing to come out and discuss why they've come to this decision, and could it, because from what I take that as, is that there obviously must be some kind of ratification, because that's going to lead to some kind of ratification in the other court cases happening. It's all very incredibly dodgy. Do I trust these people to do the correct thing in all instances? Absolutely not. There's lots of lawyers getting paid lots of money to get lots of things not really done correctly in the interest of everyone involved. It's all horrible. I've written an article about it, which I'm not sure whether it's going to be featuring in the news board or it's going to be a standalone article, because the more I write about it, the more annoyed I'm getting.
Everything will be in the link in the below if it is there.
And thank you, Cormac.
It is. And also the article Taylor has just done on all the transfer talk as well at the end of the window. But yeah, sorry, Taylor.
Thank you, Cormac, for the plug. Yeah, so there's going to be an article, because it's all boring legal jargon, which everyone hates, and it's really difficult to understand. I'm trying to make it as simple for everyone as possible, because it's stupid. Yeah. And
it is stupid, I can confirm.
Long story short, so please do read the article, but the long story short of it, it's a huge waste of everyone's time, and it's missing the gigantic, massive elephant in the other side of the room.
Yeah. Taylor's going to dumb it down for all of us idiots like myself.
I had to dumb it down for myself.
Yeah, I think it helped us all up. But like I said, it is the dull side of football, but also very frustrating.
Yeah.
Because Man City, yet again, getting away with murder. And the Premier League teams have all come out and basically said, what the fuck does this mean? Mm-hmm. Because no one has a fucking Scooby.
Yes.
Apart from us on this podcast.
Where we know it all down on lock.
We know everything that's going to happen. Speaking of knowing everything that's going to happen, it's time for everyone's favourite section. The red or white, I'm going to struggle to say it, scoreboard.
Boo, boo, boo.
If this is your first time watching, I'll give you a brief background. Every week, me and Taylor predict 5 games from the past week. You get 3 points for a correct score, 1 point for a correct result, near point for everything else.
I love a nil point.
Near point. We're doing this week on week. We're doing, like I said, 5 games a week. The winner of each week gets to pick 3. The other one gets to pick 2. I think we just jump in to see how we did on this past week, Taylor. How are you feeling? Are you feeling confident?
I think we can just skip this week, to be honest.
No, Taylor. I think we dive into it, because I think I've had, if I do say myself, a somewhat successful week.
And you know what? I really did not need you to have that.
No, you did not. Right, first game, the games that we picked, I'll do game by game. Luxembourg versus Northern Ireland. I predicted 1-2. Taylor predicted 3-1. It was, in fact, 1-3.
Oh, you shot.
1 point for Cormac, 0 points for Taylor.
I did really back the boys from
you
the
did
bird.
Really locked down. I was like my Northern Irish brothers.
Yeah.
One goal off that one, which is going to be a common theme for Cormac this week. Italy-Estonia next. I said 3-0. You said 1-1.
I saw the score back
game.
It was
in fact 5-0. Yeah. So it was a good effort. Another point for Cormac, another 0-1.
One for the marginal gains. Marginal gains are failing me.
England versus Estonia. Snooze fest, by the way. I don't know if anyone dared watch that. I said 3-0. Taylor said 4-0. 2-0.
2-0 is a joke.
1 point apiece. Chelsea women versus Man City women. I said 3-1. Taylor said 2-2. It was 2-1. As to Chelsea, by the way. And then the final game of the week, which I decided to pick, was York City versus Tamworth, which is yet to actually happen. At the time of recording, it's on in about half an hour. So that will be an extra game in next week's episode that we'll run through. But just in case for those who want to double check, I said 1-1, Taylor said 0-3. So we'll come back to that. But as that stands then, Taylor, the league table, that now puts me on a whopping 12 points.
Gosh.
And Taylor on a 8 points.
I did think this was going to be a stupid game for the first week, and I've been proven right.
You went for some slightly too audacious picks.
I did.
The 2-2, what did he do? The 1-1 of Italy, Estonia.
1-1 Italy, Estonia in hindsight.
To be fair, it's difficult predicting draw. Actually, draws is probably a safe bet usually. Maybe not Italy versus Estonia.
No, I just think Italy suck.
Well, they did also see the game they played against a certain nation that will not be named.
Yeah, an unnamed nation. Yeah, I did see that.
Yeah, Tonali with a nice first minute.
Shout out FIFA for solving that and letting them participate in World Cup qualifying.
Love my unnamed nation playing football in World Cup qualifiers when they're doing other stuff off the pitch. Not a politics podcast. Let's move on. This week, however, we are doing another 5 games.
Are we talking about Onana again?
We're talking about Onana again. Let's have a look. So I'm going to pick 3 games this week. So I will pick the first fixture. And the first fixture I've already got on my mind. This Sunday. It is the South Coast Derby with Southampton versus Pompey, which is going to be an absolutely massive one in the Championship for the first time in several years. 12 o'clock on a Sunday, so the fans aren't too pissed. What good effort, guys. I'd like to see them try and stop Southampton and Portsmouth from getting too pissed. At Southampton, it's going to be a very spicy game, this one. It's on TV. It's on ITV as well.
Is it?
Yeah, so it's worth watching if you guys do get a chance. I mean,
oh, that's huge.
It'll be an interesting one. I am going to have to back my guys. I'm going to have to back Portsmouth.
That's fair.
Simply because I've got no choice. I'm going to write Scum versus Pompey, by the way, for everyone listening. I'm going to go for a corker, 1-0 or 0-1 to Portsmouth for that one there. Taylor, what
I'm going 3-1 to Scum.
Damn it.
Okay. I know. I just kind of need to try and think. If you're going,
you got to go the other way.
I got to go the other way. I got to try and go marginal gains, but the other way.
That being said, do you want to pick the next game?
I'm going to pick the second biggest game to be happening.
I think you might as well get it in. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. It is the Manchester Derby, ladies and gentlemen. I get really when I don't think about it, and then I do happen to come across a thought of it. I get excited, and then I think about it a bit more, and then I get worried again. But then I remember that I've said many times on this podcast, the City have fallen from the mighty that they once were. And then I remember that Manchester United also sucked. So I'm going to go for a 3-2 Manchester United.
Oh, you know what? I love it.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be a really close game. I mean, we'll do a bit more of a preview after this section. But I don't fancy City more than I do fancy United, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm going to go 2-2.
Interesting.
I don't think United have 2 goals in them. I'll be completely honest. But I think City are very gettable. And I think Onana, still got him on my mind.
Yeah.
And Mbeumo, I think, is going to have a bit of a corker, is my prediction on that one there.
I don't know if Cunha's back. Apparently, he's posting stuff on Instagram, which is like teasing that he could be. But God. I don't know what his intentions are. But yeah, we'll have to find out. We'll talk about it in a minute.
Very good. I'm going to pick a bit of a rogue one here, folks.
I do well in the rogues.
I'm going to go for the Ipswich Sheffield United game, which is the Championship game.
Double championship from you, big
double
man.
Double champion. Well, you know, I'm just a football fan. At the end of the day. I'm going to watch what's on. 8 o'clock on Friday night, Ipswich versus Sheffield. I'm purely going off vibes here. I actually really don't know. I'm going to say 2-0 to Ipswich.
Huge.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for 1-1.
Yeah, fair. That's probably a safe. If you just go all 1-1s, I reckon you'd probably do quite well at this game.
But if you reckon, because...
How many 1-1s have you got?
I mean, actually, the 1-1 I did got me 3 points last time. You're right.
Most popular score in football, I believe. Well, they say it's 2-1. I'm sure it is 2-1.
Who's to say?
Who cares? Right, next game, Taylor. What you got for me?
Get you back onto the mighty Premier League for me on the Saturday fixtures. I'm really boring this week. I'm actually going for Arsenal, Nottingham Forest.
See, I was
going
to pick you, but for that reason, I didn't want to be boring.
I'm going to be boring.
Because it is an interesting game.
It is now. The X-narrative on this is insane.
It is spicy.
I'm going to go for... Oh, it's going to screw me over so much. 2-1 Forest.
Ooh, yeah. Okay. I like... You could be flying this week or in an absolute
Making irreversible damage. I do this every time I speak.
I know. I'm going to say 3-0 Arsenal on that one.
That's such a fair result. They did just lose to West Ham.
Yeah, and it's at the Emirates and they've got a new manager, which sometimes goes the other way, obviously, given. But we will see.
Gosh, go on, cool, Matt. What's your final
picture? Final game of the week. I'll just pick a Sunday one, shall we?
The Sunday ones are dreadful.
They are dreadful. Yeah, all right. Espanyol versus Mallorca on Monday night.
Wow.
I have absolutely no pissing clue.
Well, to side note that fixture, I've actually decided I'm picking a second team because Manchester United caused me a lot of stress. It's not actually either of those two. Oh. I've gone for the fourth biggest club in Madrid in Rayo Vallecano.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, thank you.
I like that a lot. That's fun. That's
but on the note of this game, yeah, no, I do have a slight clue.
Okay.
But not an entire clue.
I think Espanyol will probably do them here. 2-1 to Espanyol.
Huge.
Yeah. What do you got for me?
I'm going to go for a 2-2.
Okay, nice.
I was going to go for Espanyol because Mallorca players have to fly over. Then I remember it's about a 12-minute flight. probably won't be that jet lagged.
Yeah, I think they'll manage it when it's like a long bus ride. Okay, very nice. Another week of the Red and White Scoreboards. As you're watching this, you'll know, obviously, the result from that absolute corker, which is on in a minute, half an hour. but yeah, come back to the next week to see how that goes down. England are obviously playing Serbia as well tonight, but we do not give a shit once again.
Shout out Armenia for beating Ireland.
Yeah, great stuff. 2-1. Absolute. Who scored for Ireland? Evan Ferguson. There you go.
There you go. We're back.
Nice. Okay, right. Let's go on then. A little bit of a preview of this weekend. Obviously, the big game is Manchester City versus Manchester United. Initial thoughts, Taylor, like you said, we have spoken kind of a little bit about the vulnerabilities and the gettableness, as a word, of Manchester City this year. But we've also spoken about how shite Man United are. So it's kind of, you know, what do you reckon?
I watched a video the other day on YouTube Shorts. It was a hot takes video. Just people who sit on the subway and say hot takes. This is my hot take. And this guy basically went on to explain.
I know exactly the video.
Yeah, he went on to explain that guys who support rubbish teams, sports teams, basically have this sense of loyalty, this sense of just like overall characteristics that no one else could ever understand. You can't divorce your team. You stick with them through everything. And men are basically never more loyal to anything other than the sports team that they support. And he was a Miami Dolphins fan and how they've sucked. And basically, I was like, yeah, I agree with this. And then I went to the comments, and the first comment was, lol, Man U fans. And I was like, it does suck because we used to be the best team in the world.
Well, that's why I also don't have any sympathy for that. In the sense of, like, you know, if my dad's listening, Oxford United fan, they were in the first division back in the 80s and the early 90s. It's been a long time since they've been in. I mean, they're at the championship now. They're not a championship club,
yes,
really.
You're right. It can get worse.
But Man United were, like you said, a powerhouse back in the day. And you know that kid who left that comment on that thing was probably about 15 years old.
Yeah.
Because he's... think about it. They've only... Those, like, 15-year-olds have only ever known Man United at being shy.
Yeah. But you know what, Cormac? I've got gigantic news. And I'm very, very happy to confirm the news that Manchester United are back, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a while, but we are back. There's too
and it
much.
It starts on Sunday.
And it starts on Sunday. The Cavaliers will rise. The Phoenix will rise from the ashes one more time for essentially a charge at the title. We are going to show our title credentials against City this weekend. No, being back to reality, the X narrative here is very clear and simple. It's who's going to have the best of the worst goalkeepers, essentially.
Yeah, I think. Well, I wonder who's starting goal for both teams. Do you think?
I think you've just got to throw Lahmans in immediately.
Yeah, I agree.
Because if you don't, then the hype builds up.
It becomes more.
If Bayindir makes an error, then he's going to have to come in. If Bayindir does well, it's going to be like, oh, well, what do you do now? Do you ever play Lahmans? Do you just keep Bayindir? If you just start Lahmans from the offset, you just get him in. Mm-hmm. Go. Whatever happens, happens. James Chaffer's already made a mistake for City this season.
I still think he plays this weekend, though. I don't think they chucked Donnarumma in immediately.
I don't know.
Would be ballsy.
I reckon he does, you know. I'm happy to be proven wrong. I prefer Trafford in goal for this game than Donnarumma, just because I feel like this is the type of game Donnarumma will be good in, rather than like away at Brighton, for example.
I don't know, man. I feel like United with their pressing, which is
I don't think we're good enough for set pieces to cause the harm for Donnarumma. Although, if we take enough long shots, eventually one he'll parry and Šeško will score. I don't know, either goalkeeper, we're probably going to win.
I think Šeško should start as well.
Well, Šeško has to start because he's just played 90 minutes for Slovenia on international break.
Well, on the street as well, we just had his first bid rejected from a house, so he might be
I forgot about that. Maybe he hasn't sorted out a house. Maybe he's got a house hearing. I don't know, if he has, then understandable. But if he hasn't, and he's available, then he probably should be starting. So if he doesn't, I think that raises more questions than answers if he starts on the bench again.
I think if he starts, though, I think it's only because Cunha doesn't.
Yeah, because Mason Mount does
Mason
start.
Mason Mount does start.
Because he's had a good start to the season. It's funny because Man U actually have no England players in the England squad or anything. Yeah, we don't have that many international players at the minute. Mm. You know, thank God we don't really have that many South American ones either, because they've traveled a long distance. I mean, to be honest, the further Martinelli travels, the better, to be honest. But, you know, for us. So I just think if City play even slightly coherently, which I haven't seen, it'll be interesting to see if Phil Foden makes any kind of appearance.
Yeah, that will be
Tijani Reinders scares me because he's good and we don't really have a midfielder.
Yeah.
Haaland probably does score because he's just a bit of annoying like that.
Yeah.
You know, so we just need to be really good. Amad, I think, could be really important for us in this game. He's been important for us in big games before. And Mbeumo, again, this could be his chance. We're so back. Dalot picked up an injury over international break. He's probably going to be ruled out. So, it's cool coming up Millhouse.
It's all coming up Millhouse.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited for this game, actually. I think it is going to be very...
I'm really excited.
Like, the X-narrative does go crazy.
Yes.
I do, like I said, I fancy a 2-2 draw. Feels like, again, a bit of a safe prediction, really. The goalkeeper thing, I think, is really interesting. Because Man City's issue hasn't really been at goalkeeping, obviously. Has been there. I saw someone say it on one of the football podcasts that I listened to, which there's no other football podcast that exists other than this one, if anyone else
has listened to them. They're lying.
Man City have gone from one of the best teams, are still probably one of the best teams in possession, but our possession, especially on the counter, look just like a completely different side.
They don't have a right back.
They don't have a right back.
Mateus Nunez playing a right back fills me with joy.
Yep.
Rodri is still
kind of coming back. Their midfield feels new and fresh.
Feels off on the
it
balance.
It doesn't feel right.
They spent 60 million on Nico and he's not playing. Like that. Something off about that.
Their entire back line I'm confused about, to be
John
honest.
John Stones pulled up injured for England.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that.
He had to get... He pulled up injured and left the camp. So yeah. John Stones is out, General John. Then that's good. Yeah. Also, they spent £57 million on two goalkeepers, but have lost the goalkeeper which defines a generation of goalkeepers in the frame of Edison. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a vacuum immediately.
A lot of change.
Scott Carson's still there, isn't he?
No, he's gone.
Oh, he's gone.
Yeah,
he's gone
as well.
Vibes are gone as well. You know, it's a whole different... And, you know, you've got Kolo Touré ramping along the touchline.
Good
and
to see you, man.
Pep Linders, secret agent of Jurgen and whatnot. So so much is off about City. And you'll all will come around to my train of thought eventually.
Yeah, I think loads of people put them to win the league again this year. Nah, I think that's fair.
People don't know ball.
People just back and Pep. But I generally think, again, from what I've seen now, are they going to finish top five, top four?
Who predicted it?
Yeah. I mean, we'll wait and see. I think they're always better the second half of the season. Anyway,
I love making rash conclusions three games into a season during an international break.
It's the best thing to do.
And I'm very happy to confirm that I was right.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, so you said 3-2 on that one anyway. Yeah. To Man United, I've said 2-2.
Do you want to go crazy bonus point prediction of goal scoring?
All right, should we do that for one game?
Yeah.
You're just desperate to claw back some points, man.
Okay.
We both picked one goal scorer.
Yeah, but it can't be Haaland.
Yeah, that's fair. That's boring.
Yeah.
I'm going to say...
I know what I'm picking.
Okay, you pick yours then.
Lenny Yara.
Okay, well, I mean, it's a really good goal for you, obviously.
No, it was an own goal.
It was. Who am I going to pick? I'm going to pick a City player, I think. Fuck it, we'll go for Reinders.
You know what, he's in my fantasy. No, he's not. Subbed him out because I don't want too many City players.
Yeah, respect. I need to actually sort my fantasy out. I don't think I've still got Saka in there. Right, there you go. Looking at the other games this weekend, obviously, Arsenal Forest, I think, is a bit of an interesting one.
X narrative is insane. Give me 1 minute.
Pause for a quick break. And we're back. Sorry for that quick pause. Arsenal Nottingham Forest, I've already said it, but I'm pretty confident going into this now, especially given the Ange Postecoglou return. I do think these are one of those games where I think Gyökeres does very well. I do think he gets a goal at least. I'm excited to see Eze start, as I believe he will.
As he should.
As he should and as he will. I mean, again, we spoke about that before game very briefly. But as soon as he came on the pitch, my
if
God.
If you're playing Martinelli after an international break, after he's travelled to Brazil after his performance against Liverpool.
I mean, you never know about Arteta, do you?
No, but if he does, I'd be really annoyed.
Yeah. Special shout out to Mikel Mourinho, by the way, on his international break.
Hat-trick.
Top three strikers in the world right now.
Maybe.
It's so funny, man. Narrative is a hilarious thing, right? Because everyone was saying, including me, and I, by the way, I'm standing by this, Mourinho starting against Liverpool is a defensive decision, or a less attacking option. And then, obviously, he's gone and scored a hat-trick, and everyone's gone, oh, yeah, pick it. No, it was a defensive option. Like, the position he plays and how he plays in midfield
the
for
role.
Us. Is, that's what I mean. He plays a different role in Spain, which is running into the box, which he should be doing for us, by the way.
Is he the modern-day Hullet?
Who's to say?
He's everything Scott McTominay could be.
Yeah, but Scott McTominay looks healthier because he's living in Italy.
Yeah, he's having the best time of his life. He's smoking so many fags. Yeah, so special shout out to that. I am fairly confident, like I said. I just think we are going to miss Saliba. Mosquera looked very good when he came on against Liverpool. Saliba looks like he's out for 3 to 4 weeks.
In Cape debut? I don't know. Has he been off in Ecuador doing international duties?
I think so, yeah. I'm not sure how much he's played.
Probably hasn't been with the squad. Probably won't play. No way in hell, actually, he plays.
No, he's no chance. He might be on the bench. Maybe. Again, I'm not sure he makes an appearance. I imagine it will be...
Saka out for?
3 to 4 weeks. So he's going to be out for another two, 3 weeks, maybe. So it's going to be a Madueke right-sided performance again, which I think he looked decent against Liverpool.
Yeah, it could be clutch against Forest.
I think
Forest.
So.
Zinchenko, run it back.
Zinchenko, run
Can
it
he
back.
Play? Is he on loan or is he...
No, he... Ooh.
Is he on loan?
I think he's alone. I can't even remember now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm glad football's back. 12:30.
Perfect way to ruin my weekend would be Arsenal fucking this game up.
Yeah, that would be hilarious.
12:30 on the Saturday. Oh, I'm so excited for Saturday.
I'm so excited. You're probably thinking, guys, let's even touch on England. We decided no one cares about the September international break. The less we talk about it, the better. The less you hear about us talking about it, even better.
Yeah.
Talk about Premier League.
That's it. But do you have any thoughts on this game here?
I just think the X narrative is insane. I just think that's really unfortunate for Arsenal to have this as the X narrative as the game.
Yeah.
It's going to be exciting. I do like truly probably think you will win.
Yeah.
And would be shocked if you don't. But then if you didn't win, it'd just be hilarious. Yeah. And that's peak Barbie.
It is. That's exactly what we want, isn't it?
Yeah.
One other game here on Saturday, which I want to touch on briefly, is the Everton Villa one.
It's a good game.
It's a thing that would be a very interesting
game. Two very contrasting starts of the season.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Everton flying high at the moment. And their new saviour, Jack Grealish, who is absolutely crushing it right now.
How much have you been paid to say that?
Honestly, damn. All right. Maybe I don't want to talk about them now. Yeah. But they've started very well. Villa, on the other hand, have been struggling. I think let's be honest.
Pull up the table. I'm happy about it now.
Yeah, they're 19th.
Wow.
Which is,
You know what? It goes to testament. You really can't look at the table and start to 10 games because Sunderland up in sixth, you know, Man U shooting high in ninth, well, that will settle lower.
That's higher than I would have actually put you guys. That's on my head.
Yeah, if we finish ninth, that's huge.
That is huge.
You know, I mean, top four already could look like what a top four could look like, except Spurs.
Yeah, I guess Spurs.
And then obviously Aston Villa sitting in the relegation zone. They've, you know, it's funny, isn't it, how you can kind of put a weight, like transfer incomings, money spent to league position. Because Fulham, Aston Villa, and who's bottom?
Wolves haven't got a point yet.
All had struggles in the transfer market, all couldn't spend like how they probably wanted to.
Yeah.
Or in Wolves' case, their owner just actually didn't want it. And they've all struggled at the beginning of the season. Sunderland bought well, Everton bought well. You know, show me more, Cormac. Show me more.
I mean, Spurs probably bought well, arguably. Actually, didn't we slag they're off their transfer window off, I think?
Jury's still quite not there for Spurs. But, you know, it's a weird correlation.
I think that is a spicy game on Saturday.
I mean, I'm not here to review all these games. I think it's kind of like, it's one of these weird, with a couple of standouts, Arsenal, Nottingham Forest, I do find quite interesting.
Yeah.
Bournemouth, Brighton. Yeah.
Sure.
Tell me who you think is going to win. Bournemouth, Brighton. Just give me a name.
Draw.
Wow, I'm going Bournemouth. Palace, Sunderland. Is again, a good game. I'll probably sit down and watch it, but I'm not enamoured by it. I'm going for Palace.
Yeah,
Although I did sub in Enzo Lefebvre into my fantasy league.
Interesting.
Indeed.
Palace. Everton Villa, go.
Everton.
Nice. Fulham Leeds. I'm going to say Everton as well. Fulham Leeds.
Draw.
Nice. I'm going to say Fulham. Yeah. Newcastle Wolves.
I really want it to be Wolves.
I'm going to say draw. Oh, the Izak is... they can feel it. They're going to be going to be devastated in the ground.
Yeah. West Ham, Tottenham.
You guys, wouldn't that be amazing if West Ham did them?
If West Ham did Tottenham, that'd make my weekend.
I'm going to say draw on that one.
Yeah, I'm going to go Tottenham because the other thing. But,
And then Brentford, Chelsea.
Brentford's got to be, man. Just do me an absolutely clutch favour. Make me the happiest.
I probably will watch that, as well.
Yeah, 100%.
I'm going to want Brentford to do them.
Until
there.
If Chelsea score, if Garnacho scores, I'm turning it off immediately.
Yeah. Oh, that would be really fun.
We play Chelsea next week.
That's
going to
be great.
X-narrative.
Actually, you know what we haven't even touched on, which is a bit stupid? I mean, we're not going to have the time, obviously. But the Champions League does return next week.
Oh, my gosh. We're going to have to do an emergency episode.
We might have to. So brace yourselves. That might be incoming. Also, don't hold your breath because you never know. We have jobs and lives, unfortunately, and this is full time. But we will probably look to cover that at some point. At the very latest, you'll get a Wednesday morning upload, which will be some of the preview and a bit of a chat from the night before, and then also Wednesday, Thursday games. But anyway... let's just finish it off really quickly. Sorry, I've got sidetracked there.
United.
Liverpool.
Liverpool, probably. Yeah. It'd be hilarious. Again, hilarious.
Would be fun.
Not going to happen.
I think that's everything from me. Taylor, anything else you want to hit on there?
For an international break, I feel like it's been pretty eventful. Lots of stuff.
Well, there's been a lot of stuff actually going on
in the background.
Which
is good because it makes it go quick.
It
relatively
does.
Quick international break, which we like to see before the next one in, 3 days or whatever.
Yeah.
But, ooh. Feel like my mic.
Bear with
me. Boom, boom. Yeah, okay.
Go.
And yeah, so I think that's pretty much
that's it.
Where we need to be.
I think so. Thank you very much, guys, for tuning into another episode of the Bread and White Chalkboard. Absolute pleasure. Please like, please subscribe, please share, and all that fun shite. And we'll catch you next week. Thank you very much.